Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo. Today, I have a previous Firebird Book Award winner to share with you. He is Mark Shaken. Mark lives with his wife, Lauren, and their dog, Emily, in Denver, Colorado. He practiced commercial bankruptcy law for almost 40 years before moving on in 2019 to write, volunteer, travel, and play music. He is the author of the following books and his award-winning 3J legal thriller series, all set in Kansas City, with a backdrop of jazz, barbecue, and history. Cram Down in 2023, Unfair Discrimination 2022, Automatic Stay 2022, and Fresh Start 2021. He is also the author of And, Just Like That, Essays on a Life Before, During, and After the Law, kind of a memoir of a not-famous lawyer, and that was in 2020. And today we are going to get involved with his newest work titled It's What Makes Me, Me, A Retired Attorney's Relationship with Life and Times. And I love our times together, so welcome back to the network, Mark.
Thanks so much, Pat. Happy to be here.
I am happy to have you here as well. All right, this book is cool. I like the title. Before we dig into it, what inspired you to write It's What Makes Me, Me? Was there a specific moment or experience that sparked the idea?
Not really. I've been, in addition to writing the books, I've been writing these essays and sort of holding them and wondering what would I ever do with all these essays. And then I had a knee replacement. And that gave me nothing but time on my hands, but not really the focus that I wanted to write the next legal thriller. So I decided to collect the essays, see if I could make some organization out of them and a theme, and then continue to write until I had enough essays to purge what was inside of me and then do the book. So it was a lot of fun to do, very different than writing a fiction novel, but a nice diversion from the fiction novels.
That was actually very smart, where you knew you didn't have the focus to sit down and write another legal thriller, but you felt that you had to write, and what an introspective way to do so, probably a bit cathartic as well.
It was completely cathartic. Mm-hmm. Lots to say. My friends always tell me too much, but I have lots on my mind, and this really gave me the opportunity and the forum to kind of put it out there.
You know, I mentioned that your other book, And Just Like That, a memoir of a not-famous lawyer. So were you concerned with when you were writing this book that people would say, you know, who is this guy and why should I care?
Not really. The first book, And Just Like That, honestly, that had been something that had been percolating for, you know, four decades. I always would come home from a hard day in court and sit down and wonder, how did I get into the law business, which might have also led me eventually to the how do I get out of the law business when it was the right time. And in And Just Like That, there really isn't you get a lot about me, but that'd be unavoidable. But it isn't really what I would call a true memoir. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that might be fun to sort of build off of that, but have a lot less law in it in the new book, and just sort of address things that make me me, mm-hmm. things that I think about, things that make me, you know, live the way I live, those kinds of things. And really enjoyed it, kept the chapters short, so there are a lot of essays. They're mostly 800 to 1,000 words each, so that made it kind of easy to write while I was rehabbing.
Mm-hmm. I asked that question not to be flip, but hopefully to encourage others, those who are listening, to write personal essays. People are interested. I think people can really relate to that. I know just from your very first chapter where you say that I don't look so good in a hat, that actually sets the tone for the whole book, I think, that shows that you're not taking yourself all that seriously either.
Yeah, that's for sure. I think despite going to court for 40 years, I really have tried to retain that characteristic, which is, you know, keep it in perspective and don't take myself terribly seriously.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How did you go about choosing the themes or experiences that you wrote about in these personal essays, or did they choose you?
A little of both. I'm a list maker, and I will sit around as we're relaxing before going to bed, and something will come into my head or something I thought of during the day that I forgot, but then I remembered. And so I just write these lists down. And so for What Makes Me, the lists became topics, random, not necessarily organized in any particular fashion, but things that I thought, well, that might be a fun topic to write about. And the next thing I knew, I had literally, 100 topics. I didn't write 100 essays. I wrote 61. The thing that concerned me was, well, how are these related? Other than there's something that I thought about and thought, well, that'd be fun to write about. And as I got into it, they did have sort of categories, things about, lots of things about aging. There's the largest section in the book is about getting old, or as I like to say, old paren, ER, and paren until I'm really ready to declare, okay, now I am old.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that everyone experiences, but everyone experiences them in a different way. And some people accept that they're getting older, and some people fight it, but it is pretty inevitable. So those were easy to categorize. Then there were recollections that I have of growing up, and I think I collected all of those in some things about me, some stuff that people might like to know about me as they get into the book, so they have some idea who it is that's writing these other types of essays.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly, they fit nicely into six or eight categories, and that made me think like there really was a theme that may have escaped me as I was making the list.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Give us a peek into the book. So give us some ideas of what we can expect when listeners get a copy of your book.
Yeah, so the chapter that I, the section that I like the best is the one on aging. Because as I got into it, it made me realize that I hadn't really given it as much thought, probably because it scared me to think about it. I think everybody goes through the moment where they're 35 and then they blink their eye and they're 65. And, there were 30 years that went by there. And it all of a sudden seems like it went by really quick. And so I enjoyed the opportunity to talk about, I'm about to be old, I'm not there yet, or what I called the golden years scam, where, people, as they look at aging, they'll come up with these phrases, it's your golden years. And I remember going to a jazz concert in Kansas City for an organization called CODA, which, if people don't know, that means the end,
mm-hmm.
in musical terms.
Yep.
And it was an organization to support the families of jazz greats who had just recently died. And one of the performers was one of my favorite, Clark Terry. And at that point, he was near the end of his life. He was a flugelhorn player, I think originally in the Duke Ellington Band. And he would come to Kansas City a lot to play, and he came to the CODA concert to play. And he from the neck up, he was great, but he had trouble walking. He still had his wit and his charm on stage, and he could still play like he always had. But he was not mobile, and so he played standing for the first song, but that was obviously a real challenge for him. And at the end, he finished, everybody gave him a roaring ovation, and he grabbed the mic and said, the golden years suck, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. And that just sort of stuck with me. And that you know, aging isn't pretty sometimes.
Right.
There's some sections about some employment and me. I had worked at a bagel bakery after college, driving a forklift, and I had participated in a long drive contest for a law firm that I had worked with, for that while I was in law school. That contest didn't go terribly great for me, and resulted, I think, in me not getting a job offer. there's a whole section about writing. Now that I've done the 6 books, I've learned a lot about, you know, writing, and asked questions like why do I write, and how do I go about the process? You know, how do you get readers? There is a short chapter about reading the reviews that you inevitably get in the modern era. You get stars and comments from people that get published in Goodreads or Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and it's interesting to read what people think of the stuff I write.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. Observations and reflections, lots of opinions.
Everybody's life is so rich, really, just filled with so many moments and experiences. I just think that your book is really inspiring to others to maybe consider writing their own personal essays. It doesn't have to be published, or it could be. It's just an important way, I think, to acknowledge your life, perhaps.
I think so. That people do have great stories. You know, if you're sitting around with them, around a campfire, as one reviewer called it, or in a bar or at a restaurant, you know, and people tell you about their experiences, their life growing up, and they readily are happy to talk about it, and the stories are wonderful. And it would be great if people sat down and kind of organized their thoughts and wrote it down, because
yes,
it's there, and everybody has them, and everybody has a view, and if you can chuckle about all of that around the campfire, you can write it down when you get back.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So as you were writing, how did you balance vulnerability and privacy when writing about your own life?
Yeah, I largely ditched the privacy concern. There's some pretty painful moments in some of the chapters. I thought it was a good time in my life to go ahead and write that down, because that also makes people what they are. Mm-hmm. And so if you had a painful experience, and there's been some distance between the experience and the sitting down at the computer to write, as there has been with me, it was almost therapeutic to sit down and write it and get it off my chest. I joke a little bit about it, that some parts of the book are like a psychiatry session, and I appreciate the couch and just send me an invoice after you've read the book for the services that you've rendered for letting me get the stuff off my chest. So it didn't bother me. I think it surprised some of my close friends who may not know some of this stuff, mm-hmm. and maybe that gives them a little bit more insight in who they've been friends with for all these years.
Right, right. It felt, upon reading it, that it was effortless to write. It felt like that you had an easy time to translate your personal experiences into these compelling essays. And maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know whether there are lots of rewrites, or did it just come out?
It poured out.
Yeah.
It was interesting. You know, when you write essays, and this was true for Anne Just Like That, the one thing that you don't have to worry about is the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about whether there's consistency in the storyline. You don't have to worry about whether you kill the character off in chapter 5 and then miraculously the character reappears in chapter 20, which would be a timeline mistake of some magnitude in a fiction work. You don't have any of that when you write essays. Each one is a standalone. If the reader doesn't like chapter 2, then just go to chapter 3. That's fine. They're not codependent on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And without that need to have the structure that you would have to have in a fiction novel, it became easy. I mean, I had the topic, but none of the, as I said, none of the topics are lengthy. as addressed in the book, and it was a fairly easy process to sit down and write an essay a day. And I literally wrote the book in just under 2 months. It always goes through editing, my editing. I'm pretty anal about that. And then it'll go off to my editor to also edit it. But as far as getting it down on paper, that was effort. I don't want to say effortless because writing is not effortless,
right.
But it flowed really well.
It felt that way.
And I didn't have a day when I thought, what am I going to write today? Because I had this list.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could select from the list anything that day seemed like would be a fun thing to address or something I felt like I needed to address that day.
Mm-hmm.
That part made it easy, working off the list, because another thing that I eliminated during the writing process is having to figure out what would I write today.
Yes.
Or I already had my choices to select from.
Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of it. It is random. I mean, obviously it's all connected somehow, but as you say, it's not like you're following a plot line or a storyline or developing characters. Each one is kind of a standalone. I like that as a reader where you could flip through and like, oh, that looks interesting. Let me read that. And then you go back to the beginning and you can kind of skip around.
Yeah, and that the randomness, it is random.
Mm-hmm.
As the list is random, the book would be random.
Mm-hmm.
That made it a fun thing to write, because if I had gone down the list to number 23 and I was going to write that, and number 23 was a recollection of something that had happened in my childhood, and I didn't want to do that today, well, I could go to number 80 on the list and write about guitars in me,
right?
And have kind of a lighthearted day rather than a heavy day. So that made it an easier process for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're writing a novel, it doesn't really work that way. If you're up to the Monday before the big event happened, then you're on Monday, and if something bad happened on Monday, well, Monday is today's day to address in the novel. It's hard for me anyway to skip around.
Mm-hmm.
Within a novel. I just have to do it in order.
No, I get that. I get that. So were there any challenges, though, as you were writing?
The only challenge was to try to make sure that if I was writing about something that happened in my past, it wouldn't come out on paper in such a way that it would offend anybody who was there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
When whatever happened. There's a number of things about my parents in the book, and they're both dead, so it wasn't going to offend them. But I have a brother, I have cousins, aunts, and uncles, and so I really wanted to make sure that if I was writing something, they wouldn't take me off of their mailing list,
right,
when they read it.
I can imagine. And what about the most rewarding part of sharing your personal stories with the world?
So the most rewarding part for me was a return to a theme that ended up in the first book, and just like that, which is the kind of the reluctant lawyer theme. How did you get into it? Why did you stay as long as you did? And what happened when you exited the practice? And just like that ended as I went down the elevator, for the last time, and out to the Denver 16th Street Mall, and was elated, euphoric that I was moving on to something else. And really didn't focus on how scared I might be that I didn't know exactly what I was moving on to. And I try not to redo that, because that's in And Just Like That. But there was something that in And Just Like That that didn't really fully explain, how did you get into this and why did you stay so long? So the last chapter is Ralph Waldo Got It Right, Be Yourself. I was a literature major in college, and we read Ralph Waldo Emerson. And as I was struggling in college to figure out what the heck I was going to do with the bulk of my life, I remember a quote from him, which was, "To be yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you something else is the greatest accomplishment." And I always came back to that, because I always wondered, was I a lawyer for 40 years because that was the architecture set in place by someone else, not by me? And so I thought it might be nice and fun and cathartic for me to address that and explain exactly how that happened, but not in a whole book. And that was the chapter that I thought was the most meaningful to me and probably the hardest to write because, you know, your recollections change. Your recollections of an event change as you go through life, and I wanted to make sure that I wasn't writing a fictional chapter, that it was in fact the way it went down.
Readers, let's talk about readers for a minute. How do you hope your readers will connect with your work, and what do you want them to take away from your essays?
Yeah, I think that one of the pre-release reviews that I got when I sent the advanced reading copies around to some folks to read and give me some of their thoughts, and this repeats in the reviews that are showing up on Amazon, so I like this because this was kind of what I had in mind, and that is that people feel comfortable reading the book and relate to the things just like if you were sitting around a campfire with a bunch of buddies telling stories. And while I can't sit around the campfire with everyone that's going to read the book all over the country, I enjoy the idea that that's the feeling that they come away with, that you know, it's a kind of warm, cozy feeling that they've exchanged stories or read stories and feel like they could, you know, sit down and tell those stories to me as well when we get together. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to speak to some book clubs here in Denver and probably send out a free ebook for the members of the book club to read and then have me over and then talk about it. My hope is that after they've read it, we have one of those kind of campfire discussions. Mm. And people will tell me, oh, that reminded me of something that happened, you know, when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea. I think that's going to go over very, very well. I also think it will inspire people to write their own essays.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in this day and age where everything is a little bit off kilter and people feel a little bit off, I think it's really important to take some time and look within and really kind of understand yourself and come away with liking and feeling good about even some of the craziest choices or things that happen to you. And you can only do that if you take time away and if you write. There's one thing about thinking about it. There's quite another when you put pen to paper and actually get it out of you and onto a physical piece of paper or the computer or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you start to do that, you give meaning to something that is important to me. And actually showed up in the last 3J book, Cramdown. In Cramdown, I'll call it the good guy brother banker, is having an argument with the bad guy brother banker, and says to his bad guy brother, this is Amadi Brown saying, you know, you can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. Mm-hmm. And I think that theme is very important, and it if you sit down after you've told your stories around the campfire to write the stories, you get a much better handle of where you've been, which gives you a much better idea of where you are and where you're going mm-hmm. in life. And for me, that, I guess as I've gotten older, that's become more important. How did I get here?
Maybe that's one of the advantages of getting older is that you do have the time or the wisdom to look back and reflect.
Yeah, I don't know how wise I am, but I have a lot. You have more stories as you get older. You just keep piling up on the virtual bookshelf.
That's for sure. So were there any themes or topics that you left undone that you didn't explore yet, but you would like to in the future?
There are. They're on the list, and it makes me. And I haven't stopped adding to the list. I thought I would, but it was a fun thing to create, and so there it is. And it's kind of organic, and it grows. Well, What I'd like to do is go back to the 3J series and write a couple more of those, and then maybe see where the list is and see if there's one more, some more about what it makes me me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little early. It hasn't even been out, a month yet.
Yep.
So I also want to see how the general public receives it.
Yep. Well, I have a feeling it will be well received, and I'm sure your list will be ever growing.
Yeah. Luckily, my wife doesn't get too mad when I run out of the room to add to the list and come back.
She just thinks to herself, ah, the list.
The list. Yes.
I love that. Oh, my gosh. All right, my friend. Well, as we begin to wrap up, anything we missed that you wanted to bring out today?
No, that's pretty comprehensive.
We did. We rambled about. I appreciate your indulging me with these questions because I'm fascinated by this idea and feel that it's on my list to do one of these days. All right. Well, if you would, then give us any and all contact information where folks can find out more about you, get copies of all of your books.
Yeah, the best way to connect with me, to learn about me, to learn about the books is at my ever-growing webpage, which is markshakenauthor.com. And all the books are there, all the connections, the links are there. Many of the podcasts are linked there as well. So if you wanted to learn more about me from listening to me talk, you can find that on the media page there and click on that and learn even more.
Excellent. All righty. We're talking with Mark Shaken, and the book is titled It's What Makes Me, Me. I highly encourage everyone to get a copy of it. It's just such a fun, exhilarating read. It makes you feel close to you and kind of forces you to reflect back on your own life. There's a lot to be gleaned by reading this book. You can find it at markshakenauthor.com. Shaken is spelled S-H-A-I-K-E-N. Mark, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing you and what makes you you.
Thanks so much. I really enjoy showing up on your podcast from time to time. It's great.